我去 B 站 ，B 站教那些个，那里背了教没？
其他的事情 ，sorry。
Reminding you.
Every time a retreat ends, Yadav said he gives everyone this reminder, and he's going to tell us the same thing again.
But more than just that, Jesus did this thing. For example, the day I saw people, Sasa, Yaya, Guni, Bere, Yubi, Manjario, Stabio, Yogi, Dio, Alomo, the day I saw them, but that they do Alomo, Jesus did this thing.
First of all, he wants to thank everyone who made this retreat possible. And that includes not only the managers, but all of you yogis. Because of you, if these two worlds didn't come together, there wouldn't be a retreat. And coming together to practice the Dhamma, Siyaro said, is a beneficial work. It's work that is beneficial not only for ourselves, but for others. Whenever Siyaro went to the monastery to see his teacher and practice with his teacher, when he was going to go home, Siyaro said his teacher always told him the same thing, and he's going to tell you the same thing. Please don't stop practicing. Please continue practicing when you go home. And although his teacher reminded him every time, he didn't go home and practice. And it was only when he got into deep shit that he began to practice. And he really began to practice. And yet, Siyaro said, even when he was in deep trouble, he didn't try to practice meditation because he thought it would help, or because he thought, you know, it was a wholesome thing to do, or that, you know, it was precious, or that it was helpful. Nothing, Siyaro says. He did it because he could not do anything else. It was a last resort. He tried everything else. He tried to have fun. He tried to take drugs again. He tried everything, and nothing worked. They just felt worse now. He said he realized in the end that with this mind he could go to the moon and he would not be free of what he felt. So then he turned back to
meditation.
And he turned to meditation because he did know one thing, that when he tried to be aware of something, it made him feel a little less horrible, because he felt horrible all the time at that time. Just a little bit. It was just a little bit less
horrible.
Siyaro says not knowing is a very hard place to be. It's a tough mind to live with, not knowing why the mind suffers, not knowing why the mind is happy, not knowing how to make the mind happy, not knowing how to make the mind suffering stop. He says, we have all been in situations like this. Siyaro says, it's a hard place to be. He says, you don't even know what to do with yourself. It's so hard. When we're young especially, we don't know what to do with ourselves. We just do what we can, but we're not really. And as he practiced and watched and was mindful, he says one question kept coming up in his mind, That was, why is the mind suffering? And he practiced for years because of that question, because the mind was still suffering. And he practiced for years, trying every day to increase the continuity of his mindfulness, to stay on top of everything in his life and be aware. And he said it was years later, like 3, 4, 5 years later, that he began to realize that practicing the Dhamma is something that you can never stop doing. You can't.
Because
every time he practiced the Dhamma, the mind would calm down. It would feel better. And then he would relax and stop practicing, and the agitation would start again. And he went through the cycle over and over. He said he got sick of it. He was like, he wasn't having this anymore. And he began to just keep trying to work at the mind. And he stopped trying to relax from meditation because he realized that that's the nature of the mind. And he realized you always have to do practice. Always have to practice. He acknowledges that it is not easy to practice in real life. Because the places that we usually practice or learn to practice are retreats. And so when we're trying to practice in real life, Seattle says it's like the environment is different and the people around us are different. He says for many of us, it can be that, you know, retreat practice is fine and then practicing at home is more difficult. Why is that? He asked himself. Yeah, when he went to North America to teach, there was a joke that yogis said that, you know, it's like you get on retreat and you're a hero and you go home, you feel like zero.
Impermanent, okay.
It's like you'd have insights and everything on retreat and you can't apply anything when you go home.
Now,
And it's not because the insights are not real, Seattle says. The insights are real, but they're not significant enough. The insights are not so entrenched or well understood that they are applicable through the fabric of our life. So he said he remembers this yogi who every time he reported, he talked about impermanence. He would talk about how free he felt, how, you know, how he understood impermanence. It was impermanence all the way. And then he lost his shoes one day in the hallway. And he says when he looked at the yogi looked totally lost. He looked,
where is the impermanence? Understanding impermanence.
Seattle says he wondered where the understanding of impermanence went right then. He says, so when we understand a little bit, we think, because it's so amazing to understand even that little bit, we think that we understand a lot. He says, but when we measure it with life, and our experiences, then we realize it's not enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. He says when he first began to practice, he also felt that way. Every time he discovered something, it was like, wow, I know this. And he felt like he knew more and more, like he really understood things. And he says now with like years, tens of years of practice behind him, now every time he realizes something, he also recognizes how much more he still doesn't know. It's like for everything you know, you also see the rest that is not known.
ဘာလို့ယောဂီတပြန်သွားအထုတ်ကြတယ်အထုတ်မလဲပြောပါလေဒါပေမဲ့ဟိုကိုရီးယားကိုရီးထဲမှာပြောချင်တယ်ဟုတ်တယ်အဲ့ပြောပြန်လို့ရှင်ယောဂီပြန်လို့ရှင်သူအထုတ်မယ်ဆိုဂရိပေးတယ်
Some yogis they promise him that they will practice. And then he says when he goes to their home country, they won't come to the retreats where he is because they feel bad because they haven't been practicing and they don't want to tell him. They feel like they'll be letting him down. They don't want to say that they haven't managed to practice. And there are those who try and they manage for some time and then it fades away. So he began to think about why, and he realized that, first of all, at home there's no support. Nothing external is helping us to be mindful or reminding us to be mindful. Here, there are, you know, the other yogis reminding us, the whole setting is about a retreat and so on, so there are constant reminders that that's what we're here to do. When he was trying to practice at home, his whole extended family knew, they all lived in a building together, they all knew that he was trying to practice, and some of them found it annoying. What the is he doing? You know, they thought he was really... They found him really abnormal. It's like you should work hard at your business, which he was doing, but you shouldn't spend so much time on this, and why are you acting so weird?
Now, Dima Kusika Balu Sinai, Tarani Basinai, Diatubu. Diatubu, Tavasinai, Ladeo, but Diatubu, so we Lara, oh, and a playing old.
He says, we get on retreat, we're in retreat. And what do we do every morning when we wake up? We wake up and we think, oh, I have to be mindful. We go to dinner and we're like, I have to be mindful. We get to a sitting, I have to be mindful. We get up from the sitting, I have to be mindful. But he says, what do we do? Right now, just think of how we think of it about going home. What do we think when we... think of getting home? Do we think, oh, I have to be mindful? Probably some of us do have the intention, Sierra says, but it's, the intention can get lost in a sea of other intentions. And that in that sea, that wave of intentions of all the things we need to do at home besides be mindful, Seattle says the rest of the intentions come with real power because we've used those intentions have been powerfully used our whole lives, right? Those are the ones that we're used to exercising all the time. So that's the power with which they'll come. And then we go home, Seattle says, and whose home do we go home to? Go home to my home.
My home. My family. Everything.
Everything we see belongs to me. Is mine.
So idea what? The
So the
wrong view of Agao Nevi. So the
defilement. So the wrong view is already operating very strongly, almost invisible. And so whatever unwholesome wants to come in, it's going to come in strongly. Attachment, aversion, delusion, it's all going to be very
automatic.
On retreat, he said, we can't do everything we want, right? There's a container. When we go home, can we do whatever we want? Already the mind is set free. At home is where we feed the unwholesome mind. When possible, also the wholesome mind. But from birth, Sierra says, the mind, you know, there's wholesome and unwholesome, but the wholesome, you know, gets free rein too. So that's why Sierra says in the definition of meditation, it's to cultivate wholesome minds. So we can do that, you know, at
home.
So unconscious to us, the unwholesome can come in easily. So we're going to counter that, we have to consciously cultivate the wholesome. Say we have some confusion at home, we're at home. We have some confusion, agitation. Can we calm the mind immediately? Do we have the skill? Do we understand the mind enough to know that it can, that it needs to even? He says when we develop that kind of skill, then meditation makes sense and it's a joyful process. He's just saying that he said he's just saying that in the balance of our minds, you know, at home the unwholesome usually seems to have more room than the wholesome tends to. And so we need to build the strength of the wholesome, he said. We need to make it so that the wholesome starts to have more room.
And when the
wholesome minds become more prevalent in our minds, when they are more prevalent in our lives, Sierra says, then because the wholesome becomes more entrenched, Sierra says, then the unwholesome will still come, but they can't last long. They'll come and go. Sierra wants us to hold this information not as a goal, but as just information. Not like, you know, wondering every day, when are we going to become like this? Because for each of us, it's different. He just wants us to remember that this possibility is there so that we can have more faith in following the practice, in keeping ourselves present and wholesome. And what is life, Sierra says? Life is what is happening. Life is what is happening now. Life is what is happening in the mind. And he says, and we want what's happening in the mind now to be Dhamma, to be wholesome. Because if what's happening now, what's happening in the moment is not Dhamma and it's not wholesome, that means it's going to be the opposite. And then that's what life will be. So we want life to be wholesome. And
our life to be Dhamma.
So if we want to live life peacefully, meaningfully, wisely, Sayadaw says, this is, for him, this is the only way.
So,
အဲ့တော့ကာယကံဝစီကံမနောကံဘဝဆိုတာအဲ့တုံးခုပဲရှိတယ်ကံနေလုပ်နေတာပေါ့နော်စိတ်နဲ့လည်းဖြစ်တယ်မနောကံနဲ့ဖြစ်မှာဝစီကံနဲ့ဖြစ်မှာကာယကံနဲ့ဖြစ်မှာဒါနဲ့ပဲဘဝကိုဘဝအသေးပဲပေါ်လာတာပဲ
And our lives are run by our actions.
Our mental actions, our thoughts and feelings, our, they call it verbal actions, our speech, and our bodily actions. But everything springs from the mind. It starts from the mind, from the mental actions. Sayadaw says, and if we fill our mental actions with what is wholesome, with the Dhamma, Sayadaw says, then it seeps into our speech, and it speech seeps into our actions. And that's what our life will be.
Mm. ဆိုတော့ခုနပြောဒါဒီခုနပြောတဲ့အနေထားမျိုးရောက်ဖို့ကနည်းနည်းအချိန်ပေးရမယ်နည်းနည်းကြိုးစားရမယ်အဲ့အဲ့နေရာလေးတစ်ခုပဲနည်းနည်းလေးအစိတ်ရှည်ရမယ်အချိန်ပေးရမယ်အားထုတ်ရမယ်ဒီကဲလို့ရပြီဆိုရင်လည်းတော့ဘဝတော့နေလို့ကောင်းလာပါလိမ့်မယ်
And Sayadaw says he would just like us to be patient with the process just enjoy the practice enjoy the path enjoy the journey to discovering And he says, we will get there. And when we do, Sayadaw says, life is just much more joyous and meaningful. And he says, And although at home, Sayadaw says, we have no external support, and the only support we have will have to come from within ourselves, Sayadaw says, the very effort to bring out the strength within ourselves will make it stronger, right? Our determination to do it, our effort to do it, and using our wisdom to find out how to do it, how to fit it into our lives, or make our life fit into it. You know, the wisdom of figuring out every day, what do I need? How do I do it? Practicing the Dhamma, Sayadaw says, when we want it to be part of our life, is just like figuring out how to do work, you know, how to do our work or figuring out how to run a business. It's the same thing. We put that much effort and energy into figuring out how to do our tasks at work and how to run businesses and so on. And this is just the business of taking care of the mind. Practicing the Dhamma is finding out how to take care of this mind. For each and every one of us, Sayadaw says, the quality of our mind is the most important thing for us because it's the quality of our mind that governs the way we experience life and the way we live life. And so we need to know how to take care of the quality of our life, of our mind. And because it's something of such great value and such importance, it surely you can see, Sayadaw says, that when something is of great value, it takes, you need to invest a lot in it. So it takes time and resources and patience.
He says
so often we don't really value our own minds very much. We think so many things are important as a like an indirect directly, like that's a reflection of how important this mind is. But he says directly, we can see that this mind is so important because when we take care of this mind, he says, then this mind will also take care of all its relationships and work and everything and do it in the best possible way. So, Seru says, imagine a family and the leader of the family is bad-tempered. How would that make the whole family feel? Or if the leader is wise, then how that makes the family feel? So our mind is important. And he says, with that thought in mind, that this mind is so important, Seru says, please take care of it. Notice what thoughts sadden the mind. Notice what thoughts gladden the mind. And Seru says, recognizing these things, if we are aware, we will recognize these things and cultivate the things that gladden the mind. And don't dwell on the things that sadden the mind.
So this is
taking care of the health of the mind, strengthening the mind. We not just need to take care of our bodies, but we need to take care of our mind. Having anger in the mind is a disease of the mind. Having greed in the mind is a disease of the mind. Seru says, having anything unwholesome in the mind is a disease of the mind. So for the body, we need medication, Seru says, and for the mind, we need meditation.
Seattle
also encourages us to find like-minded people, find friends who also are interested in the Dharma, get together regularly. If you're far away, online, it's so much easier now. And discuss the Dharma, practice the Dharma, encourage each other to practice.
Yeah.
When we discuss the Dharma, Seru says, we give each other ideas about how we practice, how they practice. We exchange ideas on how we can help, ourselves to find our way through the practice. His family is large. There's 9 brothers and 1 sister. He's one among them. And when he began practicing in earnest at home and when he had stabilized it, you know, significantly, about 2-3 years into his practice, then he was different. Everybody knew he was practicing. And he says his brothers and sisters always gathered on Sunday at his mom's place. And they all came to eat. The Chinese, they eat. And one day, he thought, let's do this differently. So he said, wait, before we start eating, let's sit for 10 minutes, he said. And all of them meditate. His entire family has meditated. They all go to his teacher, everyone. And so they sat. And then after they sat and they were eating, he started asking them questions about their life. He started asking them, are you happy? Do you like the way you live your life? And he says, suddenly all these stories started pouring out. And then all of them found it really interesting to talk about it, and then every Sunday became really fun because they would come then and look forward to meditating and discussing life and how to meditate with him.
So I don't soup you weekend in my soup soup you are time lo tan nang tan mu sun nang lo kaung na mo no tiao tiao ati ho ho a pi lo ya a pi lo ya.
So if we can help each other in that way, encourage each other in that way, that would be wonderful.
Now retreat in the retreat scene le we mo ba lo so a pye ma a thot la chan phi phi ne cha ba lo so lut ta mya a lo a zo ne ju le lut ja la phi ya me pi ang lo me ai zo ri ne lo sin sa ji a lo mya lai ba lo sait tu la.
And do go on retreats, Yaro said. It helps. It puts the brakes on the momentum of the way life takes over our mind and makes us forget to take care of the mind. And he says, you know, in life, we like all the hurry of our life takes over. He says, do you know why we get angry at home? Do you know why we get angry when there's a lot of things to do? When we're busy, why does the mind get more aversive? Why is it more impatient?
Because ဖြစ်ချင်တာတွေများလာပြီးချင်တာတွေများလာအလုပ်များလာတဲ့ပြီးချင်တာတွေဖြစ်ချင်တာတွေဇောတွေကတက်လာပြီဆိုနည်းနည်းမဖြစ်တော့ဘူးဆိုမှတင်းလာတစ်ခုမှပြုတ်မယ်နှစ်ခုမှပြုတ်သုံးခုမှပြုတ်ဆိုပြီးပြီးစုလာ.
He said because when we are busy and in a hurry, Seattle says, there are many little things the mind wants. It wants to finish. It wants to finish on time. It wants to achieve all these little tasks. It wants to do things well. It has all these little yardsticks for itself. And every little one that we haven't achieved yet causes tension in the mind. And this tension builds, and that's aversion. So if each and every day, Seattle says, we would notice the tension that is building in our mind. Like, if we can, the sooner we notice it and pay attention to it and take care of it, the quicker the tension will release and relax. And then we don't build up tension in the day. He says, what we tend to do is we don't notice, we don't take care of the mind. Work is much more important. We need to finish. So we keep doing the work and the tension keeps building. And because we've let it build for a day, when we try to then watch the tension, it takes a long time to calm it down. But if we did it often throughout the day, he says, you'd be amazed at the difference
it makes.
He says, whenever you have any free time, 5 minutes in the toilet, coffee break, be mindful. Just those 5-10 minutes in between activities, if you remember, if you can make it your intention and use that to watch how you feel, recognize the tension, relax the tension. He says, it makes a huge difference to the quality of the mind at the end of the day.
So, Loba.
So like a wise yogi said in one of the interviews, she's preparing to go on another retreat at home. And so he said, please prepare to go on retreat. And there's no hurry to get anywhere on that retreat because you have your whole life to run that retreat.
Okay. So
enough? See other things?
Yeah,
are there any questions? Does anyone want to say anything, Seattle asked? I'll just see what he said. He said the most important thing is to do it, yeah? That's what matters. Yes.
And one thing, like we often talk about, continuous awareness.
I think, to use the word consistent.
Right, exactly. So I think at some point, I don't know, maybe it's an interview or something like... I think Sayada, someone said that obviously you can't be mindful all the time, you will lose it, you know, throughout the day. And continuous doesn't mean that, you know, that you should be counting every time you lost it. That gets pretty heavy. So it's more like...
More like persistent, he says. He just like wants us not to give up when we remember being
mindful. Sierra
says he'll just do some maths with us. He says, how many hours do we sleep in a day?
Eight hours, roughly.
So how many hours left?
16 hours.
How many hours you meditate?
How many hours do we meditate of the 16 hours?
Some people, they say morning 1 hour, evening 1 hour, so, 2 hours. So 14 hours left. What state of mind is that time? That time, what state of mind is? So unbalanced. You cannot improve, only 2 hours. The meditating mind must be more than loss of awareness loss and awareness more. So you, how to say, your arm is up.
So the meditating mind, being aware of the being aware or doing something wholesome or knowing that the mind is wholesome, needs to be more hours of the day than when we are lost and not knowing anything at all. If there's more water, water can put out fire. If there's more fire, fire will put out water. So Siada says we need to help our wholesome troops. Yes. Yes.
Follow up.
Yes.
What's the role of formal practice in that? And let's say you do it 2 hours or 1 hour or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Is that good to sit eyes closed and kind of like this in this artificial bubble, or should that, should the whole intention be to integrate that into the real life?
Mm-hmm.
Integrate the what into real life?
The practice, just that you're not, let's say I sit for 2 hours in a completely silent place where everything is controlled. Is that any use for everyday life? Like, should all the practice kind of be like, eyes open?
Well, whatever is... The important thing is to remember the intention of formal practice. The intention of formal practice is to ground the mind so that it can have some momentum in being mindful in real life, because... So what we want to remember is not to get attached to the quietness when we sit, you know, not to get attached to the peacefulness so that then we have more aversion outside of it and think that we always need to go back to the cushion in order to get peace. We have to remember that this is an enabler, that we then take that peace from the sitting into our lives and view from that, from that position, from that, from those eyes, rather than, Siaru says he always does that. You know, he gets up from a sitting and he's constantly watching what his state of mind is as he gets up from the sitting, and he starts interacting with the world to see how long he can maintain that state of mind.
How many hours does Sayadaw sit in a day?
Once in the morning, once in the night, one hour each time.
Formal, 2 hours, then informal.
Yeah, he did formal 2 hours a day, and the rest was informal, but in his informal, it's important to note that he had all these little pockets that he really took time out and he used as almost like formal, because he would sit at the coffee shop and that was just like sitting meditation. He would sit in his shop when there's no...
10 minutes, 15 minutes.
If he had 5 minutes that he was not interacting with someone, he was immediately inside his body, inside his mind, just observing something. He never let his mind wander around or just be lost in thought. Or he just like completely took care of his mind every minute of the day.
ยิงว่าอะไรดูว่าเนี่ยยิงว่าไม่รู้ว่าลาลาลาลาเนี่ยอะไรไอ้เฉยๆเปี่ยวลาเลยรู้อัจฉริยะนะคือไต่ไหลพุ้งๆสู่คันแล้วเปล่าจ้าแล้วไม่รู้แท้ไม่รู้มีลาแล้วตัวก็ลาฉะฉอแล้วมา
And he says the reason he became like that was because in the beginning of his practice at home, and you know, he would get some peace, and then once he got some peace, he would feel happy. So then he would just want to enjoy life a little bit, and he's but because of the state of his mind, he says the moment people started coming to his shop, he says it's as though they came to slap him or box him or fight him. He says his mind would get into such an agitated fuss that, you know, he says, like, it just completely destroyed any kind of happiness he had. And it happened over and over again. Then he started to realize that he needs to be ready to face these people. His mind just didn't have the resilience to face anyone. It was always shaking. So when he got happy, he stopped thinking that he could stop being mindful. He says, people never come to us for nothing. He says, they come to us with their stuff. So he became really watchful. Became really watchful. Always mindful. They want something or they're gonna smack you. They come with their unskillful minds, and if his mind is in delusions, then he suffers. He says the animals might not disturb him that much. The humans definitely would in the marketplace at that time.
Okay. Yeah. Yes?
Yes.
I have this feeling that maybe I've been tiring myself before also with this, like, practicing. And
before, now, as in before the retreat?
Before the retreat. Yes. And so now I'm a little bit wondering, like, I've been getting maybe some idea of that I've been just trying, and that's been tiring.
Yes.
But also I have a little bit still this open question, like, what would be fruitful to pay attention to not become tired in observing all the time?
He says, just look at the state of your mind, like whether you're relaxed or tense. It's very obvious. If it's tense and you know that, it'll start relaxing. If it's relaxed and you know it gets more relaxed. If we just keep our attention in the area of our heart and just recognizing whether we feel well or not, you know, and it we can always recognize some tension or ease. So just
it tends to take more time.
Sorry?
It tends to take more time in, like, the daily life to when you doing things with doing things with listening to how am I?
Yes.
It tends to take more time to do stuff with that kind of, like, inward attention.
Ah, to do external work. Just the beginning. Because the mind is not so skillful yet. It feels like the mind slows down a bit. But when it becomes a habit to be in touch with it, you find that you start speeding up and you're still aware. It's fine. He says, you know, if you watch ping pong players, he says, if you watch a beginner, like, you know, maybe we kind of like one ball at a time. And then you watch those ping pong tournaments. He's like, they don't even think about, it's like so automatic. It's reflex already. And we want our awareness to become a reflex. But to become that skillful, for something to become a reflex, we have to practice it a lot. So we can start with things that, you know, aren't very like, don't have deadlines and all, so that we, you know, we don't have the stress to also deal with, right? We can start with the things that are mundane and we do every day, and, you know, like watering the flowers or stuff like that. We can use that as our training grounds.
What do you mean with the grounding the mind with the formal meditation?
Mm. Oh, Tanjin, who say Suzy Rale, Shepia Jarama, say Suzy Rauba, Pura Lele.
Concentrate on the Pure Woba.
Just when you do formal meditation or like any other, like, time, like when you have 5 minutes or 10 minutes and you just pay attention to something in the mind, it sort of takes the mind away from all its because we just allow the mind to settle back down, you know, because otherwise the mind is started to agitate and become go all over. So we take those moments, whether in a formal sitting at home or the 5 or 10 minutes in the toilet or the coffee break, and we just pay attention to something, you know, the way the mind feels or something, and it just settles the mind back down so that it can start again from a less agitated place. So, you know, the momentum of the agitation doesn't have a chance to grow that intense.
Yeah.
So when we do this settling of the mind, collecting the mind, grounding the mind over and over again, and we make it a habit to do it daily, he said it becomes a power of the mind to be able to stay settled and face things in our lives. You know, it becomes the ability and the power of the mind, and that's something it's a hugely useful skill.
Can I ask one more?
Yes, of course.
when the mind is really tired,
yes,
say from a lot of overwork,
mm-hmm,
it's really very tired.
Yes.
Is it, and it needs to rest, is it then good to practice more with neutral objects and maybe not go into all that
yeah,
the most difficult times?
Sika ayam pe man ni da so yin na ho pe man ai ma chi nai hu so yin ho neutral object le be yu lai ya.
Yeah,
yes, of course.
Dika ga ai khuna dadi tamari phit la lou ayun line chang piang lai da sika ma lou pe man na le so kiri ta chang pe man na.
Yeah, Sarah says
I know di sait data piang lai yin di sait ga ku lu sait phit twa le tu ana yan ya
ho. Yeah,
the mind phit twa.
Yeah, the mind gets tired because it's the unskillful has gained momentum. That's when the mind gets tired. So bringing the mind's attention back to what is skillful in whichever way so if you find in that moment that the neutral helps, then, but basically what you're doing, whatever object you choose, Yadav says, is bringing awareness and samadhi and wisdom back into the mind. And just allowing that to repeat itself for some time, the wholesome starts to grow back in the mind and gain momentum again. That's the intention.
Yes.
Sayadaw says meditation is really rest for the mind. It's a refuge for the mind.
Follow up question regarding mental fatigue. So one thing I've definitely noticed that when I've started to be aware, like in daily life, of those kind of micro aversions, that you have a slightly annoyed or slightly anxious or whatever attitude, and it kind of builds up during the day.
Yeah.
So when I started noticing those, I definitely nowadays have more energy after work, typically, unless
yeah,
it's been especially stressful. But so I do a lot of kind of very sort of difficult conceptual work,
mm-hmm,
like solving difficult problems, and you kind of need to concentrate, and it feels like there's still something intrinsically tiring. Like even if you're as skillful as you can be, the mind still gets tired. Sort of like the body gets tired if it,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm,
exercises,
yes,
or whatever.
Yes.
So is there, you know, it's not always like defilements, that there's also something intrinsically tiring and then the mind needs to rest.
Oh,
Or how is it? Mm. Because obviously I don't see all my defilements, so that's why I'm kind of curious.
ตัวอกุโซยเนี่ยตัวไอ้ตัวอลุ่มมาตัวอ้าทุบตอกอะยินน่ะสายตัวอมายอกุตะนี่ตาโกยตัวไม่เป็นมาเนาะอืมดาใบแม้เนี่ยตัวว่าทินแล้วสอยบ่เนาะสึกก็ตัวลุ้ดแต่อลุ่กก็โหปิ้งอ่ะติอมายอายุปิ๊ดอ่ะบ่ problem solving ลงอ่ะเลยตัวตัวเนี่ยอายุปิ๊ดอ่ะอ่ะตัวซินซาบ่รอตัวเอ่อเพชินอ่ะเพชินอ่ะดาใบแม้ตัวบ่รู้ทินแล้วสอยเนี่ย Yes, because, you know, sort of when you're doing like intense work like that with the mind, it's sort of like you just like you said, it's sort of like exercising. You're not using the mind the way the mind, like naturally you would use it, like if you're walking around or something. Right, you're exercising the mind so that, yes, it does expend a bit more energy than normal, so it tires the mind. So that's why, the you know, we need to sleep at night, right? It gives rest to the mind and body.
I notice that on retreats, like I might naturally start sleeping 4 or 5 hours and I feel completely rested.
Yeah.
But then in daily life, even though nowadays, if I can't get enough sleep, I'm a pretty bad sleeper.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't suffer as much because I don't believe all the thoughts about how horrible the day is going to be and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But I still definitely notice that it's hard to do this difficult work if you don't get enough sleep.
Yeah, that's right. Just nature of the mind. We need to sleep.
Okay. So continue.
Yes.
Chalo bhi aao.